on this, sir?
Okay, hello everyone. Listen, I spoke on Shabbos, and I zeroed in on the algebraic equation, which is well known. I've spoken about it before. Rules minus relationships equals rebellion. And I probably hadn't said open in a while where I learned that. So I like many mechanchim, took a job out of Kolo. If you need more chairs, just grab their kitchen chairs, their chairs over there, just grab chairs. There are two chairs on either side of me. Moshe, you could come sit over here also. You bring your guitar? You could, next time, bring your guitar. So, I was the principal, took a job right out of Kolo to come to Yeshiva, and you do your best to run the school, you know, the best way you know how. And I wrote Rabbi Feuerman, who I had met for the, I'd never met, I'd seen, been to a workshop, it is a term, sir, but I'd never officially, privately met him. So the spoon's over here. And I contacted him and I said, you know, one boy, there was vandalism in the bathrooms. And one boy asked me, Rishus, to leave Sunday morning early to go to a Dolphin game. I told him no and he left anyway. And he didn't tell me he was going to a Dolphin game. He said he's having a family get together at 11:50. He'd leave 11:50 on a Sunday, and you know, to two other things happened, and I asked, two other things happened, and I said, and they all happened on the same day, so should I be concerned? So he told me that when teenagers do not have to know how to express themselves. Okay, on the whole. Okay, you're on the right side of teenager already. So, but just be aware that kids in general do not know how to express themselves well. They have feelings, but they don't fully understand it. So their body, their mind just says they just do this. Like they'll sulk, but they don't know what's bothering them. They're not eat. They'll punch. They'll hit. They're fighting. You have to read from their behaviors. To understand that there's something going on, you have to figure it out. So it's not so easy sometimes to figure out. And Rabbi Feuerman was saying that vandalism, a kid openly defying you, all that, those are signs of repressed hostility and resentment, which is certain that the school is disrespecting the students, and this is why they're disrespecting the students, and that's why the students are showing such gross disrespect to the administration. And quite surprised, and he just to add insult to injury, quite surprising for it to happen to a Chavetz Chaim yeshiva, which is supposedly known for its warmth and love. And there's supposedly a Muslim yeshiva. Shame on you. Shame on you. I said, well, he wrote me back. It was I sent him a fax. There were no emails yet. I sent him a fax. He faxed me this letter. And I couldn't believe it. Like, he doesn't know me. He doesn't know the school. I merely wrote to him that the four incidents that took place. And he was, like, angry. He was angry. So I made an arrangement to call him up. And he told me he never thought he'd hear from me again, after saying what he did. And he taught me this concept of rules. It's algebra, and it works in all institutions, all walks of life, everywhere. It's universal. Algebra is universal math. Rules minus relationships equal rebellion. So when he saw the rebellion, he knew there was lack of relationships and respect go together, by the way. You could replace the word relations with respect and the rules. So if you see rebellion, there are two ways to handle it. You could build on the relationships, add relationships, if you know algebra, or you could reduce the rules. Okay? I don't advise necessarily to reduce the rules, because maybe the rules, some of the rules are good, you know. No killing anyone, you know, you have a certain dress code. Yeah, the rules are good. Okay, sometimes you can be excessive, but usually if the relationships are very, very strong, you can probably deal with most of the rules. So we had to really take a very, very hard look. Some of the rules were excessive. In the best of intentions, we had created a self-evaluating system of rules. So for instance, for davening, we let the boys self-monitor hats, jackets, being inside by davening, all that. Self-monitor, meaning what? The Rebbe, all he had to do was just note on an attendance sheet that was submitted at the end of davening, was he wearing a hat, a jacket, did he stay inside by davening, was he talking? And, you know, you got 1 point for every infraction. I can't even believe I ever did this. 1 point for every infraction, okay? So if you didn't have a hat and a jacket, that was 2 points. If you were talking, it's 3 points. If you were sleeping, it's 4 points. If you reached 20 points, if you ever reached 20 points, it was you were automatically suspended for a day. But there are ways to reduce your point total, which was updated and posted every day with a code, so no one saw your name. And you could get rid of 10 points if you had a clean week. If you had no points the whole week, I think you got 10 points off. If you served the Sunday afternoon detention for an hour, you get 10 points off. If you davened for the umbud, you got 3 points off. There were ways to get points off. So only someone who just didn't care would he end up with 20 points. We thought we were so brilliant when we thought of this. It was like in 2000, like 20 years ago. We thought we were so smart. Maybe it started being helpful, but you know, it was a disaster. And I think that was the rules part. We got rid of that. We had these people doing detentions, because if you had 18 points, you don't want to take a chance that tomorrow something happens, you come late, you're getting suspended. So guys are doing detention. So detention is literally the old way detention. We hired a base manager guy to sit in a room on a Sunday after dismissal for an hour, and sat there an hour, and then you go home, 10 points off. So one parent came to pick up his kid a few minutes early. He came into my office. He said, "Pagan, I need you to come in with me for a second. But if you want to know, by the way, if you want to know why I'm so smart, the answer is because I'm so stupid." Because if you make a lot of mistakes, you made every wrong turn, then you know afterwards how to make the right turns because you're so smart. So if you're stupid when you're young, you can be smart when you're old. So I'm leaving the recording on. If anyone thinks I'm smart, you should have known me 20 years ago. I wasn't so smart. So what happened? So the parent called me over and said, "Rabbi, come with me." So I followed him. So just come. And we walked to the classroom with attention. There was a window looking in, and the kids were literally, they looked inside the window, the kids were climbing the walls. He says, "Look in there, that's my son in there." I said, "Yeah." "You mean to tell me he's being rehabilitated in there?" They were climbing the walls, they were killing each other, you know, and I had to be honest with myself, like, you know, I didn't really, like, it made no sense. You know, we got rid of everything. Rabbi Foreman advised us not to get rid of the whole system, keep it, probably, you know, just monitor more carefully. Just scratch the whole thing. But I'll tell you my own edus. It's only an eid echad, but you know. But this is my analysis. There is not any less compliance after we got rid of all those points where we were monitoring it than there was when we had all these consequences. The question for all of you is, why not? Here we had these built-in consequences, points and detention, and give you a chance to get off there. You'll work for a clean week, and you know all these things. How come it didn't work? How come there's just as, you know, there's as many violations now as there were before, and there's as much compliance now as there was before. And maybe the compliance is even better now. So the thing is, you know, you can't force people to do things they don't want to do. And the point I wanted to get to, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I never know where to begin. But hashpa, everybody wants to be a mashpia, a yeshiva, especially kids growing up in yeshiva. It's about hashpa. So I see many different interpretations of the word hashpa. So the one interpreter I want to use now, hashpa, comes to the word shefa, which is slope. The hashpa is supposed to just come right. It just goes automatically. It slopes down. There's no friction. It just goes right in. And the way that happens is with love. And how do you tell a kid? You don't tell a kid I love you. You think you're weird, which you probably are. You know, you don't just tell a kid I love you. It's like they have to see it. They have to feel it. It comes to doing chesed for them, but yeah, be careful. You know, it has to be the right chesed. You know, you can't do weird things. I've seen rebbeim, new rebbeim, overdo it, so they end up with a weird relationship with the kid. The kid's like, you know, like can't be. You got to start off really slow, deliberate, but to note that the kid gets the hashpa from him seeing such a positive, happy Rebbe, Mechanech, trying to do things for them. These systems were so creating such hostility and resentment that it's like mind-boggling how anyone in their right mind could have done. I didn't think of it myself. I was following all the other high schools in America that were doing it. And when I realized that it was ridiculous and we found a different mahalach, I told everyone, I called everyone, I visited everyone, I was telling them, I called Rabbi Singer and Rabbi, anyone I knew, I was telling them, we have it all wrong, it's all wrong.
Even Queens, it was like, you look out the window, you're
like, that was your day? That wasn't your day?
It wasn't my day.
But you heard
day,
about
they
it.
They still hung your grades up on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, I know in Queens they were doing it. I had great Ashwa and Rabbi Singer. Yeah, Rabbi Singer. Can someone, I'll do it. Alexa, turn the AC down to 71 degrees.
My mission.
Someone's got to do the work. I can't do everything around here.
It's not recording, Rebbe.
Oh. I'm busted. So this is a very important. It's very hard. Now, how is someone supposed to run a classroom with 20 kids who all want to talk and do what they want, and you have to manage them and teach them, and the kids want to go out to recess, they don't want to come anywhere. How do you discipline and still create? Yeah, you have teaching-based medrash, sometimes you think it's way easier, there's not so much discipline-based medrash, but you guys know, and if you're around, you know that there is discipline in based medrash. It can be really, really, I bedidi have a uvda. Bedidi have a uvda, my roommate in Forest Hills, back in the day, was not getting up for Minyan, and I don't know the details of what happened in the conversation with the reshiva, but one day he told me he wasn't getting up. He was really like maybe even a bit of depression. He wasn't getting up at all in yeshiva, like. You know, I was in my room or something. I came up at 9, 10, 11, 12, and I was like, I just work here. And one day he told me he had an appointment with Rashiva. So Rashiva had an appointment like at 1:30 with Rashiva. So I said, wow. Because how do you get that appointment? Everyone was dying to meet Rashiva. Because I don't know, I think one of their BAM said that, you know, how to meet Rashiva. And I was so out. So so nice that she was gonna go meet with him. Back and forth, like, he came back into the room a half hour later, took his bag, book bag, or he threw it against the wall, and he said something I can't repeat. And that's it. He was asked to leave the yeshiva. And I don't know what happened in that meeting, but there's plenty of discipline that goes on behind the scenes. No one talks about it. But sometimes there are decisions that they made that there is discipline. I'm not saying there isn't any time that one has to use a heavy hand. You have to be able to use a heavy hand sometimes. You have to enforce, like, I would bomb Moscow. I mean, I would, you know. You have to be strong, and you have to have the confidence of your convictions and carry through. You have to carry through and not be scared. You stand up for what you believe in, but and a Rebbe or any teacher who has to manage the classroom, the kids know that they respect. They're the biggest. The teacher who is always nice, yeah, if you want to leave, you want to do this, you want to talk, you want to schmooze, you want to come when you want, you want to not do the work, and okay, I love everyone, this is fine. Those are the teachers where the kids say the class is a joke. The teacher's trying to show so much love. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't, you know, that you can't do that. You have to be a very strong, you know, but the kids know that. You know, I'll give an example. You know, of what it'll sound like for a teacher who's going to be strong. Yeah, like this. You'd say like this. Think of like a high school class, a 10th grade class. Okay, you come in. Okay, gentlemen, we just finished learning Dav Zayin, and now Amud Aleph, and this week we're doing Zayin Beis. Then we're going to have 4 days of Chazara. At the end of those 4 days, we're going to have a major exam on all of this Gemara, Rashi, 7 Tosfot, 2 Marams, a Marsha, and the 2 Ritvos that we did. Gentlemen, this is going to be the most difficult piece of the year, but I'm going to be there. I'm going to help you. I'm going to set up review times for you. I'm going to set up study sessions with you. But at the end of the day, you're going to be held responsible, accountable to know this material. So you say it sternly, but you, at the same time you say it sternly, you're not scaring them. You're telling them that at the end of this, why will you be happy with me at the end of this? Because you're going to know a whole daf of Gemara. Anyone here ever do, 10th grade, they'll probably say no, ever do a blot of Gemara with 7 tosim in a row? With 2 marams, a 2 ritvas, and a marsha, never. And you have walked away with a whole blot with 7 tosim. It is difficult. And I wouldn't have thought before this year started that you'd be able to do it, but I can't believe you're at that level. I'm looking around the room, there's not one person who I see cannot do this. So just be ready. It's going to be hard work. So get your notebooks out. We're starting this now. Like you challenge them. Challenge them. They will rise to the occasion. But you know, if you're not gonna be able to do it, then okay. Then we may have to make different arrangements. I don't know what that is. I mean you let them know this is the expectation. No one says love doesn't have to be do anything you want. It's not what I mean. It just means that you know, tell them it's going to be hard. I reformed and said that you tell them it's hard, but I'm going to be there to help you. First day of the school year, same speech. You know, this is what we plan to do. How many of you have, well, you have to know beforehand. How many of you, I came in this year, and one boy walks in with a Gemara Bava Metzia, like really skinny. I said, what? Gemara Bava Metzia aren't so skinny. So what's with that Gemara? So I know, what is that Gemara? So he showed me, it was one of those Gemara Rashi, Tosfos, and Rush. If you ever seen those, Gemara Rashi, Tosfos, Rush. Mm-hmm. They have those really skinny Gemaras. So I said, then that's not gonna do. So he looks at me like, you know, with a smirk, says, "Rebbe, every single Rebbe, the whole, every year since I'm in ninth grade, I teach in 12th grade, every single Rebbe tells me that you need these big fat Gemaras. I schlep around, I have a hernia from schlepping around this big fat Gemara, and no one, not one Rebbe has ever, we have never opened up anything past Daf Zayin or Daf Ches. We have not opened up anything past there. Never." I said, "Well, we will this year, so you can't use that Gemara." Okay, Rebbe, I'm gonna be really angry if I fall for this again. So, anyway, I do on every sugya. I do a maram. I do a riff. I do a rush. I bedavka could do it just that kid. And not only that, but on the first bechina of the year, I told them that on the bechina they have to be able to find a rush, a maram, a marsha, a ran, a Mordechai, a Tosefta. You know, I don't go back to the, you know, they don't have the old Hadras. They have to find the Chachas Manoach and the Yakima Farshim, Rishash, Madura Basra. And on the test, I did an oral test, and they had 10 seconds. I would write the Mar Mokums. I would write Marsha Lamadalad on the days Dibra Maskil Vaha, third word in Dibra Maskil, in that Dibra Maskil. What's the third word? I had to fill it in. You had 10 seconds. You had 10 seconds to tell me the word. If you didn't do it in 10 seconds, that means, you know what it is to teach a maram and for kids who don't know where the maram is? There are 20 kids in the class. Okay, everyone, find the maram. It's in the back after the marsha. No, that's Rabbeinu Usher. No, back. No, that's the riff. If you have 20 kids in the room, it would take you 25 minutes. You have to. They have to know. They'd be fluent on where it is. The guys that couldn't find the maram, marsha. It's very hard when you're in high school. You don't know where it is. So I made them do it. But then I learned with them. So they feel, you know, that's like a disrespect to them. If you make them buy this big fat Gemara, the kid walked in with an attitude. He had like post traumatic stress on these Gemaras. So. Okay, I spoke enough. Any questions on any of the above? Can I have a Diet Coke, please? It's close for a drink.
How do you know when you're being too nice?
I don't think there's anything about any ever be too nice, but you may not be an effective classroom
right.
Management. So. You know, the old adage, 90% of student misbehavior is teacher-induced. So if they're misbehaving and they're not learning and they're walking all over the place, it's your fault. So, and I, when I say that, I don't mean to disparage the teacher or the Rebbe. I mean, just I say that, so don't get upset at the kid. That's why I'm saying it. Don't get upset at the kid. It's probably not his fault. He can't learn in the environment that is right now, so... To try again tomorrow to figure out how to. That's your job is to figure out how to get them to learn. So it's very, very hard. That's a good question. So I got everyone thinking. Good.
Rebbe was saying how relationship and respect.
Yeah, sure. That if you're teaching a class, okay, and you have to be there for 3 hours to teach the class, and you don't know how to, can't keep them quiet, so you tell them, okay, for an assignment today, everyone take out your white pages. I don't know what white pages are. Here's a list of phone numbers to just write down, 100 of them. I want to see if you could write them down accurately. So the kids feel very disrespected because it's a waste of time. And so they feel disrespect. So you could have, you know, rules could be very simple, not a lot of rules, but they were disrespected because you gave them an assignment and didn't respect their time, You know that the studies show that cheating in schools happens, the numbers go up when the kids feel that the teacher does not test fairly. So teacher will pull a test out of some teacher edition workbook, but it's not what he taught. So the amount of cheating that goes on is much higher. And if it's not on the right material, if it's not taught properly, all those things go ahead. There's much less cheating that goes on in the Mudei Kodesh and the Mudei Chol. And not only because Rebbeim are better proctors.
Not only
because that.
Part of it?
Well, they're probably better proctors because they were probably better cheaters.
You got a recording.
I mean, you know, they get the kids. What is right? I mean, they understand the kids. They don't understand where they're coming from. They understand the whole culture. So, I remember when I was in high school. So there was a Hebrew regent. This didn't happen in my class, but it happened in a different class. But when I was in high school, the teacher, who was a Rebbe, was administering the Hebrew regent. The Hebrew regent was, the state requirement was to pass a language, was Hebrew. So he was reading the multiple choice questions. So he says, you know, he read a word, a sentence. Hey, the answer is it A means this? Is it B means this? It is C means this. Or is it D means this? You know, he was giving the answers. So, you know, stuff like that go on. When I was in high school, the New York Post on the front page.
Do you endorse that behavior?
No, I don't endorse that. That's terrible. But the New York Post printed on the front page. They did an expose to basically show how easy it is to steal the regents. So there was a whole scandal. Everyone was stealing regents because the state would send it to all the schools, and some kid would go into a school and get the regent and sell. And they were selling. You were buying. I remember, I was able to buy the answers to a regent for like $10. I didn't because I thought I'd get arrested. But, and I didn't do it, because I didn't have $10. So I wasn't going to ask my parents for $10. They would probably ask me what it's for, and I wasn't going to lie to my parents. That's like stealing ready. So I didn't do it. But I would have been happy to get the answers, but I wasn't going to pay for it. I do my cheating, you know, private, you know, for free. But whatever. But anyway, the next morning, New York Post, front page printed the regents the day before it was being administered. Wow. They printed the regents on the front page because that's how easy it was to get. Wow. So they felt, and I'm sure they took a lot of heat for this, and the New York State canceled the regent. But
I'm probably glad he didn't buy it.
I got it. No, it still cost me a quarter. But
how much we got the joke?
No, but something like that, you know, the Rebbeim really do, they understand the kids, they understand the Chachmas, and they, Ocher Ani Beramos, you know, they can figure it out.
Because they
can figure it out, so it makes it easier. But also the Rebbeim are usually much more in touch. The tests are fair, the guys have an opportunity to learn properly, and there's usually an ample time for Chazara, and, you know, the communication is much better on the whole. But in other subjects with teachers, they don't have the same. But now, it could be now that a lot of teachers do have good relationships with the kids, and it could be there's also less cheating. But you guys know. You tell me.
No. Wait, a lot of the teachers have good relationships with the kids.
No, I'm saying, is there less cheating?
Is there more cheating in secular studies?
Than in the 90s?
Oh.
Huh?
Than
the Moody Kodesh?
Yes, no, there's less
than
the Moody Kodesh.
There's less than the Moody Kodesh.
I still memorize the answers to whatever Mr. Schmidt says.
He gave like this whole speech and he said that I'm not your friend, your teacher.
I'm not your friend.
I'm not your friend.
And how did that make you feel?
Sad.
Very like...
Mutual.
How did that make you?
You know, it takes a lot of chachma to create a healthy student teacher student rabbi relationship. Yeah, it's it's not simple to establish a healthy relationship. I would start you know, to love the students. Love is what does love mean? I love the students. How could you come and get a class list and say, I love them? Like, why would you love them? Why would you love them? You know, it's really, you know, we were speaking to Rabbi Grunblatt. I was with him over this past Shabbos. And a responsibility of a Rebbe, they asked Rosh Yeshiva what a Rebbe should learn. A Rebbe is actually teaching Bava Metzia or whatever, maybe fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade. What should a Rebbe learn? So the Rosh Yeshiva said, once you have Talmidim, you have an achrayus to your Talmidim. So you meshubit to your Talmidim for everything. It's not just a job, but in Klapei Shmaya, they're your meshubit to them. It's a total shibut. However, but you have to be a Rebbe. So if a person doesn't learn and he's not growing, then he will become a less effective Rebbe. So a Rebbe has to be growing and learning. So if he's growing and learning because he's preparing a shir that's at the level where it forces him to grow, then okay, he could do it through the shir. Through the shir itself, he could grow. I'm sure Rabbi Baruch Ber didn't have to learn a different masechta to grow and learning while he says his shir for the 11th time on the Bavas. I'm sure he was growing on the shirim and kol kavod. But what happens if you're teaching seventh grade, and for the seventh time a mafkid, and you know a rebbe can become very stale and very stagnant in his growth. That will affect his ability to give over to the talmidim. They don't see that excitement of a learning. So eventually, maybe not the first year, but eventually it will manifest itself in the poor rebbe. So then, to be a rebbe, he has to learn other things. I'll tell you a good maysa. This is worth listening. This part is worth listening to, if you can skip to minute 35 of this recording.
33.
About six years ago, a special need came up at the elementary school, and I was the only one who was in position to be able to assist, and it would have meant, it happened to be the year that Rabbi Brigida became the principal. So I didn't have that achrayus to be in the building. At Mela, many were asking me to go and help out with this need at the elementary school. Okay, so the question was about giving shir. So to do it properly, there's only so much I could handle. I was afraid to give shir, and it's like having to be in two places at once every day. Give shir, run there, come back. Mishmar, I was nervous. So I thought it'd be better not to give shir. That was my thinking. I don't know if I was right or wrong. So, but I called Rabbi Grunblatt and asked him, you know, should I not give shir? So Rabbi Grunblatt told me, this is mind-boggling story. Rabbi Grunblatt told me that the yeshiva held that the yeshiva cannot be run by Baal Batim. Yeshiva cannot be run by Baal Batim. So I totally didn't get it. I said, I don't get it. The yeshiva is not going to be run by Baal Batim. It's still be run by the three yeshivas. What do you mean? He says, no. If you're not learning, you're not giving shir, and you're not learning, then as Rashiva, you're going to be running the yeshiva, and you will be the balabas. Because if you're not learning and you're not growing, then what are you? You, you, it's going to be run by Baal Batim. You know, it doesn't mean that Baal Batim don't learn, but learning is the only thing that makes you think properly. It gives you the Das Torah. It's not old Das Torah you have to be holding. So it's pretty fascinating. You know, it doesn't mean you have to give a shiur, but usually if you're so busy and you don't have a shiur, it's be hard to be still holding at the same level. And okay, so we had a whole, you know, I just found now, I speak on Shabbos. I was just looking for any old materials that I may have had, because I didn't have to give any shmuzim. Right, Grimblatt was there. He gave 5,000 shmuzim. Right, Chait was there. I was asked to give some 3 different topics on things, and so I found 7 years ago, which I'm going to hopefully restart. I didn't remember. That's how bad. Since I wasn't giving shir, I gave Bekiyas Chaburas for the Beis Medrash. It was Bava Metzia. I just found the packet. I know it's mine because I see my handwriting. And there were 9 or 10 Bekiyas Chaburas I prepared over that year on Eilat Metzias. You know, at every blot I did one. You know, through Zion, I know.
We also did in the high school.
Huh?
Back
to I know, but I did it for the Beis Medrash. I prepared it for the Beis Medrash, and I used that for the high school. So I'm gonna try and go through it and do some of them. But yeah, they didn't ask me to give that chair. I asked them to give that chair, because that chair was at night. It was after all my craziness over there, but. So there were a lot of facets to a Rebbe. You know, I think the Machanchim Kol that was started, you know, it's very, very important. And, you know, some days I said, I can't believe I signed up for this. But I did it. I thought it would be, you know, it's good that, you know, we got a lot of Rebbeim on board. It was very hard for them, the Rebbeim, like, committing themselves to it. But it's like, you know, not every Rebbe is giving shir necessarily with marmakomos, but... And then I'm sure they learn on their own, but you know it's a hechrich for them to do it. So you know when the Rebbe's holding and learning, he's a totally different Rebbe. So that's a very good. There are a lot of facets to what makes a Rebbe be able to handle all the frustrations. A lot of frustrations, you know, you could have. Kids don't always listen to you, and then you know then parents don't you know get upset. Yeah, parents get upset all the time. You know, so that could be frustration. They need a lot of chizuk, and it's a pretty thankless job. You know, like who's thanking them? You know, I think Rabbi Grumbat said over Shabbos that when Torah Academy started in Boca Raton, so they wanted to get a grant from an organization which is no longer in existence, PEJ. So. Hey, Yossi, your parents were involved with the founding of that school, so they were. I think they were involved with. They were there for the story, and when the people at PEJ were giving this, you know, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to a new school. I think they gave them $100,000 or $200,000. It was like huge amounts of money from an organization. So they wanted a. They needed a head of school. Rabbi Grimblatt was still here. They needed a head of school, so they asked Rabbi Grumblatt. They needed a head of school. Rabbi Grumblatt was the head of school, the first head of school at Torah Academy in Boca Raton, officially. And when they came for the grant, Rabbi Grumblatt had to go to the meeting to see what the school is going to become, what are the philosophies of the school. So they basically patterned themselves after Torah Semis. And you know, that is what Boca did. Why should the kids have to schlep? A lot of kids used to schlep into Torah Semis. So it was a long schlep for a first grader, a second grader, to schlep to Torah Semis from Boca. So they patterned themselves after this. And when Rabbi Grumblatt came to this meeting, the Balabatim who were there, I know, it could have been your parents, the Kohlbergs, I don't know, and they started saying that, well, we're patterning themselves after Torah Semis because Torah Semis had an amazing curriculum and they give it over with such love. And it's a Kiddush Hashem, and the kids, you know, are ambassadors for Torah, and the staff is unbelievable because all the staff's on the same page, and so on and so forth. And Rabbi Grunblatt is like, you know, sitting there and like dumbfounded that yes, Rabbi Grunblatt, he's okay. He said, yeah, I'm okay. I have never ever heard I'm here a long time, you barely hear any compliments about his yeshiva. You don't hear anything like that. He always, anytime anyone ever calls him, it's usually to complain about the school and why this is no good and this is no good and this is no good. That's routine. When do you ever hear a compliment? So he said it was worth the whole thing just to hear compliments about Torah Semis. That's pretty amazing. I think I once said over this Maisa that, I'm pretty sure I did, but you just stop me if you heard it already, that when my chaver, Rabbi Summers, was the rabbi in L.A., so he went to Eretz Yisrael, and he was getting brachas from different rabbanim. He wanted to get a bracha from Steinman, and he waited 2 hours to get in, but by the time he got in, as he passed Rav Steinman, he got his quick bracha. When he got outside, he forgot. Something he needed to tell Rav Steinman, he forgot. Had no time to wait another 2 hours. He had to go back to Shulmayim. He was leaving. He was so upset with himself. This whole trip, he was waiting to tell Rav Steinman this, and when he finally got there, he forgot. So the Gabbai saw. He says, "Everything okay?" He said, "I forgot to tell the Rashiva something. I waited the whole time. I don't have time to wait." He was like in tears. So the Gabbai says, "What do you want to tell him? Like, what's on point? What do you want to tell him? Tefillah? You write a kvittel. I'll give it to him. What do you want to tell him?" So he says, okay, I wanted to tell him that when he came to L.A. with the Ger Rebbe, it was such an amazing chizuk for the community. I just want to thank him and tell him that. So he goes like this, what? He takes him by the lapel and he pulls him through all the people, the Gabbai, and he takes him to Rav Steinman and he says, this Rav wants to tell the Rashiva something, and he told him. So he was so happy he was able to tell him, but when they walked away, the Rabbi Summers said, like, thank you so much, but why did you do that for me? So he says, the Gedolim also need chizuk. Can I imagine? Rav Steinman needs chizuk. Oh my gosh, that's mind-blowing. Rav Steinman needs chizuk. Even the Gedolim need chizuk. Can you imagine what a regular Rebbe does? They need so much chizuk. So, yeah, there are a lot of things. Like the learning gives them chizuk. Tony gives them physics. Yeah, what else?
Your question.
On the original topic, is like funny. Like, is Rabbi saying like this is, I guess, a foolproof solution to be able to get anything done in the classroom? I mean, like the students obviously don't want to take that test, but if you say it like that, they're not going to complain. I mean, is it still shy that they're going to complain, and you're going to have to work with, like, have to deal with that?
No, I think the first thing, though, is every single age has its own chachma of how to administer rules. You know, in second grade, third grade, the first 2 weeks, you just spend the time on routines. You know, routine. When we go outside the class, outside the hall, everyone lines up against the wall till everyone's ready, then we walk. And if they don't line up well, he's okay, boys or girls, let's go back inside, and then we'll do it again. Go outside, come back inside. We have to do this, have to get it right. So every age, that's what you do in second grade, routines, routines, routines. But, you know, I did one example for a 10th grade, you know, administration of a test. But this chachma, you have to find out, you know, for each grade how to do it.
Whatever, but if you whatever, saying whatever this best way to be firm, but caring, show them at the same time, like then that they'll be macabre. I mean, guarantee. So isn't it shy at the, like, they're still like, at the end of the day they're doing something they don't necessarily want to do. What don't they want? What part are you suggesting that they don't want to do? Not interested, well, in the 10th grade example, not really interested in having to do the chazara and take the test. Why? Necessarily. Why? Because it takes work.
Huh?
It takes work.
I
and
think
no one likes tests.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's someone there would still complain.
I don't know. I mean,
I love tests.
A test, yeah, if the Rebbe or teacher's making it very scary, but, you know, first of all, you train the kids that the test is really, first, I don't know what grade you're talking about. They don't give tests till first, second graders. I mean, they're not supposed to really. But a test is really a test
for the
kids.
Yeah,
you know, 10th grade example?
Yeah,
the test is really, I tell the kids that the test is really to see how well I'm teaching. You know, so please try your best, because I need to know how the material is going through. That's the purpose of the test, you know. But, yeah. And also the Rebbe has to be consistent. And hopefully, you know, the kids know it. You know, you want the kids to be able to show off what they know. That's the only part that is of, you know, no, there's no one sentence that's definitely going to work.
What was the joke?
I'm actually need a break.
What was
the break?
What was the joke?
Sorry about that.
I'm not sure it's exactly the shot. I can imagine this shot is like what the Indian could be saying. Lemberger in Kansas said a story once. Thinking about Tisha B'Av, he said this story. He met up with a friend from like elementary school years later. The person was completely off the derech. So he asked him, what's your shot? What's your story? He said when he was in elementary school, he was like third grade, fourth grade. He was very wild. And pretty much he failed the year. So the Rebbe told him that if you want to move on to the next grade, I think he had an assignment he had to like copy over the entire Sefer Bamidbar or something. He had to copy over like, the entire Sefer Chumash Rabbeinu, the entire Davening. One of these things is a notebook. The kid was like serious, and he's like, I want to move on. So he really killed himself the whole summer, and he worked and worked and worked, and he got it done. On the first day of school, he was like so proud. He's walking into the Rebbe and presented. So he walked in like that, presented it to the Rebbe. The Rebbe gave him like a nasty look, took the thing, and said, okay, get lost, and chucked it into the garbage. And the kid was like, okay, I'm done with this religion. I know where I'm going when I go. So, I don't know, same idea, like the kid just didn't feel respected after, you know, he put in that work.
That's deplorable. You believe that? You believe that story?
That's crazy.
I don't believe that story. I believe that the guy is saying that, but yeah, I don't believe it. I don't. Any real Rebbe would never do such a thing. I don't believe that. Hard for me to cobble that story, but if someone did do that, yeah, it's terrible.
What's
that for
doing? He's not Travers ahead. The kid didn't feel like he was respected.
What's that for doing? The rules.
He's not Travers or worse than that.
It's much worse than that.
That's not.
Not being respected was, you know, you gave too much homework. This is like.
This is cruelty.
Yeah, this borders on abuse. abusive behavior. Someone told me they were in a major yeshiva, and the Rebbe walked in, and there was a secular studies book on the desk. So the Rebbe went like this.
Oh,
he moved the garbage can over, and then he, with the klachayad, he pushed it.
She knows.
He pushed it into the garbage can. So, you know, like, they want to know why the kids are not respecting the secular studies teachers, you know. At Torah Masorah Convention, I was reading through my notes the other day. They asked whether the kids should stand up for secular studies teachers, and it sounded like the Vod Rashiva said that they should.
What?
They don't
what
know.
What
is a novel?
Out of respect. Out of respect.
Why do they make fun of Jews?
You shouldn't be a teacher.
They
make fun of
Jews.
Fire him.
Is that what you wanted to say?
I'm watching. Let's
respect recording. And love. Do those come together? Can you respect without, like, let's say someone just respects his talmidim, but he doesn't love them, or doesn't show them love. Is that possible, or what's the chiluk? What does one create, or doesn't?
I don't know. When you respect someone's space, but not getting in, getting too close to them, because they won't appreciate it. And we respect their time by showing up to class on time and give them their recess. And, you know, giving them time to do the things that they want, respect their feelings.
I mean, like the result, I'm saying, like, result wise, the chiluk is just that they'll respect you back, but they won't love you. Is that the difference? If you respect them, they'll respect you, but they won't necessarily love you unless you love them. Is that?
Yeah, like. I have a thought, I just want to figure out how to say it. There are some, I remember when I was in camp as a counselor many years, and my brother told me the same, happened to tell me the exact same thing. There were counselors who were always negotiating with the head staff of which kids they wanted in their bunks. You know, not this kid, oh, not that kid, you know, this kid. And my brother said the same thing. Neither of us ever had a kid that we didn't want in our bunks. I remember thinking this. So, like, the state of mind you have to have, like, is there any parent, is any parent that doesn't love their kids? I don't think so. Maybe it's a percentage of crazy people, but no, parents love their children. Now, why? It's just like, oh, because they're biologically your kids, so you automatically love them. What is it? It's just, it's biology, it's genetics, that there's a magnetic pull. I don't know, I doubt that. That's the pshat. You think that's the pshat? Yeah? Okay, maybe. Can't practice. It's not mokra, but I assume it's more than that. I assume that a person feels that their child is their achrayas, their responsibility. So mela, there's an attachment to, now I'm going to do everything to help this child. It's my responsibility. So that creates the bond. It creates responsibility. And when you give so much, that creates the bond. You want to do more for the child. So that, what is love? You know, ava is giving. Ava comes from the word have. Have is to give. So when you give to somebody, you're constantly giving, you end up loving them. It's automatic. I assume it's automatic. So I think the answer to your question is that, yeah, when you, we're giving all these things by respecting their time and their space and their feelings and their privacy, then you're giving them all that, so it's going to automatically end up that you care so much about them. Why are you doing all that? I think it's easy to respect someone's time and space, and you know, it's not easy to do that. It's hard to do that. I got my own problems. I'm worried about your problems. So that I think that is key.
Sort of like a higher madriga.
Yeah, I think it, it results.
Off of respect, sort of.
Yeah, I think so. It's very not. You know, it's not a science, but you look around like, yeah, why is that? Why do you love your talmidim? You love them because you're trying to push them, you're trying to accomplish something, you're giving your life towards it. So I gave the you know, one shmooze, I said that it said by when Klal Yisrael was Ovid the Avodah Zarah, the Baal Pa'ar. So the pasuk says Vayitzamed Yisrael the Baal Pa'ar. I think that's the pasuk. Vayitzamed Yisrael the Baal Pa'ar. So with Vayitzamed, I think Rabbi Abachai says, the word Vayitzamed comes from Tzemed Psil, which is from Bakar, from an animal. It's like Tzemed is it's Dovak Ve'eno Dovak. It's not fully attached. So you think about the Baruch Shalom, like, he loves Klal Yisrael, and when he had to testify that Klal Yisrael committed this terrible sin of Baal Pa'ar, he used the lashon of a yitzamed, which is, davak benu davak. They did it, but they weren't. It wasn't 100%. You know, that when you love, you know, like a kid does something. So how does the parent take it? Okay, he did it, but yeah, he was in a bad mood. Come up with all these excuses, like what we do for ourselves. Okay, you know, don't hold so much against me. I had stress that day. I had this. I didn't mean it. Like, you come up with all the truths, and you should be understanding. So when you love someone, you're trying to, you know, you're trying to come up with all the excuses. Okay, he was an ones. He was this. It comes up with you look at them so differently, because if you don't love the kid, then you're gonna be like judging them constantly, lira. You judge your own children, the tov, when they do something. Come to parent-teacher conferences, you'll see. You know, the teacher's going one way, the parent says, well, you know, the other way. Just had it in the last couple of days, like the craziest, you know, disconnect between school and parent. Craziest disconnect, you know, they're opposite ends of the spectrum. The same version of the same facts with two totally opposite versions of why that's happening. So I saw this interview with Putin's speaker of something, foreign ministry, and there was a woman, and they were asking her, you know, pretty strong questions. That wasn't the American press, but I think it was European press. And they were saying, like, well, why doesn't your country, a Putin, care that your country is now the malign of the world? So and also all that blood is on your hands. Like, why would your country take such responsibility? So the speaker said that we're taking responsibility. America and Britain, they're the ones who have blood on their hands. Okay, so I got to hear why they have blood on their hands. Because you are the ones reporting that Russia invaded a sovereign nation. And that's your narrative. We don't believe that. We went into our own country, and they're taking our country. And what did we do? And you are causing the Ukrainians to say that they're right, and therefore they're fighting, and therefore they're dying, and therefore it's on you. Your blood's on your hands. So you have the same facts. And do they
weren't serious.
I mean, I think they believe it. I think they believe it. Yeah, ask a Palestinian. That's a good raya. What do the Palestinians think? The Palestinians think that they're right, because I don't know where they go back to, 48, or they lost the war. You lose, you're out. But why don't they get that part?
They're trying to win the war again.
I think they really believe it. So, like, the facts, if you don't have feelings for something, then the facts could be viewed in a totally different way. So, good? Okay, so what? Yeah. I promise Usha isn't going to sleep. Yeah. After this question, it's officially, you go to sleep. Yeah.
Rebbe said, brought up that his brother never found the fantasy of camping that he didn't like. Isn't it shy to have a camper that people think differently and who thinks very differently than the counselor and is very hard to get along with?
No.
Even just a personality
wise. As a principal, to answer it honestly, as a principal, there were kids who just weren't taking. But as a Rebbe, counselor, it never happened to me.
It's never a kid that you didn't like just because they were just like a jerk.
Never. I don't say didn't like, but that there were kids who I couldn't reach as a principal, and they were very contrary. Couldn't reach them, and I felt it was, if I'd been their Rebbe, I could have reached them. But it was, yeah, a different relationship. I was more the policeman a little bit, you know. So it was like understandable, but as a counselor, as a Rebbe, that never ever happened to me.
Did Rebbe say it's because of position of relationship?
Yeah. It's your achrayus. Then don't be a Rebbe. If you can't make room for every one of those kids, then you're in the wrong position.
That doesn't mean you get along perfectly with every single kid.
No?
What?
No?
You're a man to get along with
you. Why doesn't it mean that?
No, there's personality. I don't know. Personality don't match up that you.
Nah, that's Krum.
What?
Krum. I said Krum. That's Krum. Personalities don't match. What happens if your kids, your own child, has different personality? You say, "Well, personalities don't match, so I'll try a different kid. Try mommy." That's Krum. Nah.
Yeah.
Where do you get that from? That I don't buy that. Huh?
All the kids last year in our
class. Yeah,
no.
Different. I remember my wife was teaching preschool. And at parent-teacher conferences, a parent came and said, "I think there's a personality clash." Because the kid was whatever. My wife must have been telling the parents something. It's a personality clash. Ridiculous. A parent coming in and saying that the problem is because of the personality clash. Not a personality clash. The kid needed some, I don't know, medication. I don't know. But... Not a personality clash. No.
Do you ever have any personality clash with people in general, man?
Yeah.
Personality?
Never.
There are some people I don't like their personality. I think they're bullyish, and I don't do well with that. So I just avoid it. But I think most people.
That means, in other words, you.
No, I
think could you.
No,
like,
not personality clash. I don't hook up with someone who's looking to be a bully. Yeah.
So
that
if Remy has someone that's a Talmud.
Remy
has a Talmud who's a bully.
Bully? Talmud's gonna bully me?
No, not bully you, but
what?
So you help him?
I help him. Yeah.
Those kids you want to be close to the most.
Never happened. That never happened. Ever. Ever. And not ever happened. I had a personality clash with a student. And I can't imagine it ever happening. I'll flip the field of Sutton, but I can't imagine it happening, not because I'm so great, but if your achrayus is to help the child, so what do you mean? You try to help him, whatever he is, I have to help him, wherever he's holding. I have to help them. So when he personality clash, I don't care where he's holding.
But as principal,
as principal, I wasn't able to reach every kid. Because I was asked to intercede. That's my job. And they don't want to intercede. So, like... I'm done.
So what about, like, life ideology clashes? Is that different?
What's clash mean?
No, let's say a kid doesn't want to be religious. I'll tell you a good thank you for bringing that up, man. We were talking. I was telling Moshe Kalshman before that you have to respect their right, all these things, the time and the privacy. But there's another thing you have to respect. And we had back in the day when I was telling you before, but the kids were very angry. So Rabbi Foreman came and he did a study on our school, and he interviewed the Rebbeim. And this is 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, and he asked the. He asked one Rebbe, like, what do you yearn for? What's your job? How do you view it? He says, well, I'm doing everything I can to make sure the kid doesn't chas v'shalom go to a co-ed high school. So the Rebbe Foreman said that, and he named the name of a particular school that the kid was considering. Sorry, before I made the observation, you're welcome to disagree. I'm not saying it is the Das Torah, but Reb Foreman felt that for Rebbe to say it with that level of disdain, the Chas V'Shalom go to co-ed high school, to say at that level, he felt that K'mayim upon him, the kid, that's coming through. The kid was considering likely going to the co-ed school, and Mamela, the Hagasha of the Rebbe was skewed, and it was coming out to the kid, and that's why there's a bad relationship. It doesn't mean you want them to, you know, you want them to go to the co-ed school, but it has to be a little tweaked. You know, when it comes to dealing with your kid, it has to be different. That okay, you'll hopefully Be'ez Hashem you'll steig the best you can, but you'll steig much more if you go there. That's the better hargasha to have. But if the hargasha is Chas V'Shalom, mm-hmm. go there. Now it may be Klapei Shmaya, it's Chas V'Shalom that they go there. But once you have a child in mind and you're talking to them as every day the Chas V'Shalom go there, that comes out, and the kid feels disdained, disrespected, judged, misjudged, and it's a come out. No, he didn't say you should let him. He didn't let him. He didn't. He just says that you have to calibrate your hargashas to make sure that you're not going to be inadvertently disrespecting him, and the very thing that you don't want him to do, he's going to end up doing because you disrespected him because you didn't want him to do it. And had you not disrespected him, you may have been able to influence him to do what you didn't want him, what he ended up not doing.
Official, isn't it dishonest though?
Honest?
You actually feel it's Chas V'Shalom. Yeah, why should I tell him that? I think you'll steig there, but steig here more. It's not true. You don't actually feel that way.
Well, it's called, you know, and anytime you have an argument, you have to respect where the person's coming. You have to respect his opinion. He feels that. So he feels it. What are you going to do? You have to respect that he